Welcome to the T&D podcast brought to you by TomTom. We think you're trucking awesome. You deserve a trucking awesome app. That's why today we're excited to talk about the ultimate trucking companion, TomTom Go Navigation. With premium features designed to make every delivery a breeze, Go Navigation ensures you reach your destination efficiently and stress-free.
Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. It's Dougie's still editor-at-large and very busy, so it's Matt Ireland once again, chatting to my old mate Paul O'Callaghan over in Australia. How you doing, Paul?
Very good, Matt. I've been anxiously looking forward to this and haven't really had a huge amount of time to do much research on it, but you know, there's memories of trucks I would have seen pictures of in magazines and Googled over as a youth. So yes. I actually never got to see any of the trucks we'll speak about. I actually wouldn't really have seen any in real life. I never got to those lofty heights of actually get to attend a truck show in England.
Yeah.
So unless it's just ones that have reappeared lately, wouldn't have seen them. But that, you know, as a young lad, I was fascinated when I saw pictures of these show trucks. So yeah, been looking forward to it, Matt.
Excellent, mate. Excellent. So what have you been busy with work? I take it took us a little while to get this put together, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Just with the time difference, and then a lot of times, you know, I'm out of coverage as well and phone range and that. So we've been really, really, really busy, and it's been good. Plenty of variety. Just spent 4 days. We were texting each other yesterday and just trying to see if we could lock down the time. And I spent 4 days just out on one particular station, just kind of on contract to the station. There was two of us there, and we were just on contract there, moving cattle from one part of the station to the other, back to the main place for sorting. So, you know, it was kind of long enough days.
Yeah. What sort of mileage is that off road then, roughly?
You know what, we didn't actually cover a huge amount of mileage, and on those kind of jobs, it's charged by the day, by a half day. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's how they charge, because you couldn't really it's a lot of the, you know, our trucks are really were serviced on the hour reading, because a lot of times it's pretty slow going. And you're just off road, and where we were there in particular, it was just a mobile set of cattle yards. So as opposed to permanent yards, you know, where you have lots of space and they can draft off cattle and they have access to water and all that. It's just sometimes in some of the rough areas, they'll just gather up cattle into a set of mobile cattle yards, and then they'll kind of draft them onto the truck, which means it could take you like 2 to 3 hours to actually load the truck. So I mean, you know, you're not really doing much mileage there, so I didn't even take much. You don't even take much note, you know. You just could be like, you know, a couple of hundred kilometers in a day, but still, you've been sort of working all day long, and you'll try and get those kind of jobs done in daylight hours, more or less, because it's just too difficult and too dangerous also.
Yes.
In the dark out there, you know, you're dealing with a lot of wild cats and that. So it's a nice bit of a mix, you know. You do a few days of that and then you're kind of looking forward to getting on to a bit of what we call bitumen work. But anyway, I got back to the yard here this evening, and I've got to get some new tires on tomorrow. So just with drive tires, we try and get about 70,000 k's out of a set of drive tires, which mightn't seem like a huge amount, but after that we'll put them onto a dolly. Steer tires, I'm after getting about 85,000 on them. I was hoping to get about 90,000. Generally, what'll happen is they'll kind of chew out at the edges.
Right.
I've got a slow puncture in one, or a bit of a hole in one. So I think it's just time to put those on. So that'll be kind of for tomorrow, and then I'll head off again tomorrow back out to that station for more off road paddock cartons. So I won't worry about washing the truck. It's just pointless. You're in dust all the time. But that's it. Just been busy. What about yourself?
Still doing much the same, mate, to be honest. Probably the sort of same mileage as you're doing, sort of, but on road, just on my local work. So, but just what you said about looking forward to the bitumen work, as they call it, it just sort of reminded me when I used to sort of go to Romania and places like that, you'd sit through the motorway in Germany and Austria and whatnot and think, oh, you know, this is easy but a bit boring, you know. Once we get to there, it's going to be, you know, proper driving, because it's up and down through the gearbox and around the bends, and because there's no motorway and blah blah. And after several hours of slogging up and down, sat behind really slow trucks through Romania, you just used to find myself thinking, I wish the motorway was finished and we could just sit on that. It'd be nice and simple. But drivers are never pleased, are they? It's like a friend of mine saw me the other day and he phoned me up and he was moaning and groaning because he had a manual gearbox. I thought it was quite funny. He's like, well, this one's pretty worn out and it's a bit potluck of trying to find a gear. He's got a V8 Scania manual, which I dare say an awful lot of people who listen to this would probably quite like to go back to. But he was sort of a bit jealous of the mighty Renault T-Range I had with this automatic gearbox, which isn't something you hear very often, let's be honest.
That's right. And I think sometimes it just kind of depends on what you're doing. You know, like there was a fair few times when over the last few days, you know, I was really, really enjoying it. Like when you're kind of, you're going through creeks and, you know, the whole kind of combination is sort of, you're swerving and snaking around and you really feel what's going on.
Yeah.
Up through the seat and the steering wheel and you're changing gears. And, you know, that is quite nice. The only thing I was kind of noticing was it was just after a while. So the pedal is like, it's not like, it's mounted differently. It's actually a Williams, who make the pedals. So you push down on the pedal, it's mounted on the floor as opposed to, you know, the way your accelerator, which is mounted. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And because, you know, we're off road, there's no cruise control. You can't really use cruise control. And I just found I was kind of getting sort of a pain up sort of my right hip, and I've put it down to just that. It's a kind of an unnatural way to really hold your foot.
Yeah.
So that was just my little whinge. But anyway, there was a couple of occasions I just put it on to the cruise control and to get to stretch out the leg. But one point worth noting, I should say, about the having a truck with a bonnet is you really do get a lot of leg room on them.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one big advantage to them. But that's really what's been going on. So shall we delve into show trucks of the, will we say, 80s and 90s? Or?
Yeah, it's pretty much, isn't it? Because, I don't think there really were shows in the 70s, were there, as such? Not, I'm really aware of. I mean, Truckfest sort of kicked off early 80s, didn't it? I'm sure somebody will tell me if I'm wrong, but there must have been some sort of show such, but it didn't really seem to take off until the 80s. And what personally I've found since sort of researching a lot of these, and I've sort of known for a long time, is when it all started, it was all just so personal as such. It was really individual styling, individual thoughts. There wasn't off-the-shelf stuff, so people had to make it and get it fabricated and things like that. And so everything just seemed different. You could walk around a hypothetical show back then, because we're a bit too young to sort of remember that, and every truck would be very, very different. Do you sort of agree with what I'm saying there? You know what I mean?
I couldn't agree with you more, and you actually sent me a link to a couple of shows which were in, you know, the north of England. I think that was about 1992, that kind of era, late 80s. And what I remarked upon was just the variety of trucks and just how different everything was in comparison to nowadays. Like, you go to a show and it's, you know, no disrespect to anyone who brings, but the cabs now, you just got these big square cabs that all sort of look the same, and you can't really do a huge amount with them without actually sort of, like, take for example, if you have a next gen Scania S and you put a bull bar on it, it doesn't really do much for it in comparison to, like, you know, back in the day, like a 112 or a 142. You put a bull bar on it and a headboard and, you know, stainless mud guards and stuff, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, you know, it looks really cool. But just the trucks that were out back then, you know, you could have, like, you have DAF 3300s, 2800s, an iconic shape.
Yeah.
Then, you know, you had in 88, you had the 95s coming in. So they were all going around the parade lap. You had, you know, Foden's flat top Volvo F10s, F12s. Yeah. And then, like, you see an F16, Iveco Turbo Stars. Again, a very, you know, unique shape. And guys had wheel trims and, you know, different things on the roof, and just the variety was absolutely class.
Yeah.
And you could bolt on a lot more stuff back then as well, Matt.
Yeah.
You could, you know, exhaust stacks, you could actually see them, because wing kits weren't really, you know, a massive thing either. And they didn't, yeah, I just thought that was really kind of like the glory days of truck shows.
Oh, yeah, couldn't agree more. And I think quite a lot of people as well would would have a pair of like Eminox stacks, for argument's sake, and they would integrate the air cleaner into one of them.
That's right.
As a sort of extra sort of bit. So, so you had sort of two in one sort of thing. I think
that's right. I remember a friend of mine had I was still in you know, school, I was whatever, a teenager, and he had an F10, he had a flat top F10, a 1982 F10 that he'd imported from England, and he called one day and he says, come out here, Woodledge, I've got something I want to show you. And he'd gotten a pair of Eminox stacks, of course, second hand, because there's no way you'd be splashing out on a new set of stacks. And that was done exactly as you described, and I'd never seen it before. And you could tell that the one on the, let me get this correct now, is it the left hand side where the air breather goes, or the right hand side? Maybe the right hand side. It had a kind of a mesh over the outlet of the stack.
Yeah.
And that was where the air breather was. But like even to get a set of Eminox stacks, which I don't really think Eminox are doing exhaust anymore, are they as much?
I honestly don't know. I wouldn't have thought so, because it's not really,
I don't think so,
so much cool as I suppose, because they've got so, what's the word? I can't think of the blooming word now. They're so complex, aren't they? With the exhaust gases and cleaning and Euro efficiency and whatnot. I guess there's not really the market for it. I mean, I know a few trucks do have big massive pipes going up the back, but I'm presuming they're generally not plumbed in. And I'm sure you've seen as well as I have, not so much for the UK trucks, because we don't really go abroad so much, but especially the Dutch boys, if they start playing about with exhaust and things like that and they get into Germany, the Germans really don't like that, because obviously it's affecting your Euro emissions. So you're claiming to be Euro, say, 6, and if you've just got straight through pipes and you're down to sort of Euro 1, you're basically fiddling their tax system.
That's correct, yeah. And I've seen pictures of, you know, next-gen Scanias with, you know, bellowing out black smoke, and it's just, you know, black smoke is fine for older trucks, but I don't even think it sort of really suits the newer trucks. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a huge fan of, you know, two big drain pipes up the back of a cab in comparison to a set of nicely made Eminox stacks, you know, with the heat shield around them and the exhaust pointing out. I think that was, you know, I definitely was a fan of those. There was some Swedish ones as well. I'm not sure if there was something called like Dan was in the make, like Dan Trucks or something like that. Do you remember what Graham Cordner had on his on the Royal Centurion?
He didn't have the Royal Centurion, did he? That's
John Phillips. Sorry, John, I was looking Phillips. I was looking up Graham Cordner earlier, just before we came on. So no, my mistake. But do you remember stacks he had on that? They came from, be sure it was Sweden. You know, and they had a kind of a distinctive look about them.
Yeah, there was. Just trying to think, because I spoke to Robert Hymus recently, and he had some bits made that I'm sure he said that was Dan truck from Denmark, and I believe it was London's truck equipment imported them.
Denmark, you're probably right. Yeah, that's probably more accurate, yeah.
Yeah, because Volvo did offer, I think Volvo offered a factory upright exhaust, didn't they? That used to see quite
a lot. They did with the, it came up at an angle on the back. And yeah, it'd have been actually nice to get. Yeah, they kind of look cool. It was distinctive.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if, I can't really remember Scania having a factory one. But that was the.
I don't recall one either.
Yeah. So no.
But yeah, that's one thing that's sort of gone by the wayside. But again, sort of like the personalisation thing. I'm currently working on Trevor Streeter's F88, which is still about. Just one second. Bloody dog barking.
Yeah. So dogs. Oh, sorry. He has to have his say as well.
Yeah.
I actually did. It was great. I saw Streeter's F88.
Yeah, it's an 88, yeah.
Yeah, it is an 88. Yeah, I saw that actually at Gaydon
last year,
yeah. And that was, you know, unbelievable to see that thing restored again, yeah. You know, such an iconic truck.
The first time it's been out in over 20 years. It was just...
Wow.
Just amazing. I mean, the story behind it, it started life as a 4x2, which I was shocked about. And it's, yeah, I think the chap who now owns it, Lee, I can't think of his surname now, I think he's only the third owner, because Trevor bought it second hand. I'm still trying to see if Trevor is about to speak to him about it. But I've got a little bit of information on it from Lee and some of the old magazines. But when you look at it, it is just a real time warp vehicle. Like, if you customise a truck like that nowadays and you turned up at Truckfest, people just sort of laugh at you, and it would be sort of not embarrassing, yeah, but it wouldn't fit in with what people think of as customising. But just like the wheel arches and that ball bar and everything about it is just right. So iconic, and just
of the era and the paintwork, and it's like a kind of a pearl sort of off
right.
pearlescent,
it's just such an iconic thing of the time, and it's still got its original paint, that truck.
Oh, wow.
I was shocked at. Yeah, it's never needed.
Whoever painted it did a good job.
Yeah, I think it was BP Rolls of Andover painted it, I believe.
Yeah, rings a bell.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they were involved in any of the other customising work. That's another question I've got. So, but yeah, that's it's a great truck. It's so nice to see it still.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, it, you know, that Volvo F88, like, you know, they were... Was it stopped making them in, was it 77? Was that the last of them?
I think so, yeah. Just trying to think when, give or take, you know.
But and that was, you know, I suppose it would have been, like, I can't remember a huge amount kind of on the show circuit. It would have been more kind of into the F10s and 12s. But yeah. No, they were actually the very first truck I ever set in was an F88, and I can still remember it clear as day.
Yeah.
But it was, they were, when you look at the size of that cab, actually, in comparison to what came next, you know, they were quite small.
Yeah.
Even the, you know, the bunk area was a lot smaller. So when Volvo brought out the F, you know, F10s and F12s, like, they really made a lot more space for the driver.
Yeah. It's just, and I remember a lot of people have said as well, like, when the Transcontinental first came out, people look at it and go, wow, you know, look at what the hell is that? It's just this huge cab, sort of in comparison with everything that was about at the time. And you put it next to something now, and they just seem so small, don't they? Everything. I mean, even modern cars. I mean, I've always often said this, you know, I still call it the new Mini, even though they've been out over 20 years. I mean, they're huge. They're not Mini at all, are they? They're... I'm sure a car transporter driver once told me they put the same wheelbase as a Land Rover Freelander.
Could well have. Yeah. I've got a 91 Volkswagen Polo G40, and that's you know, when you compare the size of a Polo back then to what a Polo is now, Polo now is absolutely huge.
Yes, yeah, they are. I love a Polo, a Mark II Polo. Bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first car I ever had had a 1 liter 45 brake horsepower. So
yeah,
I always kind of salivated over the prospect of having a G40, and you know, it took me a fair while to get one. But when you sit into it, it really does feel tiny, you know.
Definitely. And it's like driving a go kart, isn't it? Though, and you actually you actually drive the car. That's what I like about it, because they don't have power steering, and it's all proper old mechanical technology, and they're just fun. A lot of fun.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Well, there's a feeling there, and a connectivity, and just what I was doing kind of before we came on was just writing a little piece for Truck and Driver, just for from the Sharp End. And it was basically just kind of talking about that now. Basically, it's all about kind of, you know, look at modern trucks now, and it's really all about horsepower. So you've got, you know, 770 horsepower.
Yeah.
Flat floor, not really much kind of connectivity in comparison to, you know, older vehicles when you were kind of changing gears and felt connected to the whole thing.
Yeah, you'd feel everything through the seat, through the steering wheel, a bit like what you're doing with the off-road stuff there.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So it's kind of not all about horsepower, really, and it kind of also brought me around to, you know, electric cars when, you know, after a while, like, electric cars have become more powerful than combustion engine cars, and it kind of brings you to the conclusion, or people who are really into cars, like, oh, well, you know what, no matter how much performance performance they offer, no matter how much faster they are. I'm still not interested. I still prefer a bit of connectivity. It's not all about performance at the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's about the feeling you get from the vehicle. So
yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we've deviated slightly from our...
little bit of a diversion. The road was temporarily closed. We've popped down that
deviation.
We're back
as
out
as they
now.
Say in France. Yeah, yeah.
But you were looking at Yates, weren't you? S-A-Y.
Yeah. Stuart A. Yates, Brailsford in Derby. I'm not sure where Brailsford actually is, but I just had a quick look up there. There was a Trucking International article from 1988, and there was some really nice pictures taken. It looks like nice rolling countryside, wherever that is in Derbyshire. Are you familiar with Brailsford? Or?
No, I'm not, if I'm honest. I mean, Derbyshire's quite a picturesque sort of area, isn't it? So sort of the Peak District and whatnot. But
Anyway, back just to kind of give a bit of a rundown of what was contained in the article. It was 1988, and he was running 12 trucks.
Yeah.
So I think there was five F12s.
Yeah.
He had four Mercs. There was 1633, three 1644s, a brace of Scania 142s, and I think his dad, who had been driving a Ford and 8-wheeler, was then just swapping over to a Volvo FL10.
Right.
But yeah, basically, you know, the whole thing was about running top power trucks, and surprisingly, he said that the F12s were heavier on fuel than the Mercs and the Scanias. Although reading the report, one of the Scanias in particular seemed to be like a, what do they call it? Like, is it a Monday morning truck or a Friday evening truck? Friday afternoon job. Gave lots of problems. And then I think there was later magazines, then he seemed to have a couple of 143, 470 top lanes. I know I remember reading about a 1748in a magazine that I still have back home. And he never had an F-16 from what I know. There was one F-12 Globetrotter. There was Daft 95s when they would have came out new. And there was a MAN or an MAN, whatever way you want to describe it, F-90. But everything he had was just absolutely top class.
Yeah. I don't know whatever happened to them, because they were a really striking fleet, weren't they? They weren't overly customized, were they? But they just had a lovely black, like red and black livery with a few lights on them and whatnot.
The livery was class, alloy wheels, of course.
Yep.
A headboard, maybe, you know, a couple of spot lamps or four lights underneath the bumper, stacks. He really, really had taste. It seemed to be all flat trailer walk.
Yeah.
Now, it did say in the article a lot of the trucks were on contract hire.
Right.
But do you remember them from? You remember seeing them?
I remember seeing photos of them. Again, I went to Truckfest Southwest when I was about seven or so, because there's photos of me there from when we lived in Weymouth, but I don't recall anything about it, really. And then I think we might have been to another one, but I can't remember. Like, the next Truckfest I remember going to was when I was about 17, so I just remember seeing most of them in the magazines and stuff like that, and maybe out on the road occasionally.
Yeah, he certainly seemed to be big. There was a lot of things about them in the magazine. I think there was another, you know, magazine from about 1990, like, and there was, you know, the 143 steel bumper top line was on the cover of it, and like, really, there was nobody running the level of top spec gear, like the amount of it that he had. I presume the fleet would have expanded a bit.
Yeah,
but it was all real, real top of the range stuff.
Yeah, it would have been nice to work.
Big truck show attendees as well. Yeah,
yeah.
The Mercs. Yeah, he was. So that time he had mostly Volvos, and then he seemed to be quite happy with the Mercs as well. Not sure how the DAFs went there. Well, the MAN was actually a really, really striking looking truck as well.
Yeah, was it a Roadhouse or just a flat roof one?
No, an F90.
Yeah,
flat roof. Yeah,
they did do a Roadhouse in the F90.
That's right. Yeah, there was. Yeah, they're probably, when you think of Roadhouses, you probably don't think of as many with the F90 as definitely opposed not. To the F2000.
No. Yeah, exactly.
I do remember having a poster of an F90 Roadhouse, and it was CF Jennings from Scotland. Do you remember that fleet at all? It was blue and white. Seemed to do a lot of oil and gas work.
That's right. Yeah, I think they're still going, I believe.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Somewhere up around the north of Scotland, are they? Or?
I'm sure they're Aberdeen way somewhere. Yeah. Exactly where.
Yeah, which probably brings us around to Graham Corder.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Which, ironically, he never got involved really. Well, from sort of from what I've read, he didn't really get involved in the oil and gas industry out of Scotland, which is quite surprising because it's so sort of busy. He started as an owner driver in the 70s and built it up to a few trucks, then realised that it's just not brilliant being an employer, so just sort of cut it back down. And the iconic Scania that he had was his third Scania, I think it was. It was the very first 470 in the UK, which I didn't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
magazine article says it went on the road the day after type approval was given, but then the conversion on the cab took 2 months. So I presume it was ordered and bought the day after as such.
So it was G143 NRS. It's just one of those regs.
Yeah.
I remember. So that would have been like a G reg, like a 1989, is it? That would have been the first of them.
I think it is.
I did 1990. Yeah. Okay. And who did the cab conversion on, or the cab extension?
It was Unity Conversions, I think it was called, in Bolton, which I've never heard of. And it was iconic for having a shower inside.
That's right.
And a double bed.
In a shower, but
had a shower and hand washing basin that come from like a caravan unit.
Amazing.
Yeah,
back then. Well, amazing even now, but back then especially.
Well, that's it. I mean, and, no one provides a shower nowadays, do they?
No. I'm sure it's just probably too much hassle. But the thing that really struck me about it was I was kind of mesmerized by he had palm trees painted. Was it, were they up on the roof somewhere?
Yeah,
on the side of the cab.
Yeah, I think it might have gone through a couple of different paint jobs, because originally there's some zebras with a zebra crossing and a lady, and then there's like some parrots and stuff like that. So I think
they're all nice kind of gentle things to have, inoffensive things to have painted on.
That's right.
As opposed to, some alien bursting out of a scantily clad woman, this kind of thing. I just thought it was a nice kind of it'll make you think there's a bloke I'd like to have a chat with.
Yes.
And of course he had the cow catcher on the front of it.
Yeah.
I didn't realise now that he had built up to a couple of trucks. The only pictures I've seen are, obviously there's lots of pictures of the 143, and then there was a 142, a white kind of 142 with red stripes on the cab.
I guess that was his previous truck, I presume.
Yeah. And then, just this evening as well, I saw a picture of a blue and white version 1 FH12 Globetrotter XL tag axle with Graham Corder on it.
Right.
So, yeah, that was a bit of a surprise to me. So that would have been, even if like the XLs didn't come out until 1997, I'm really getting things mixed up tonight.
Yeah.
So he obviously was still going into the late 90s.
Yeah, I think he was still trading into the 2000s as a haulier, because he had several trucks. And I know I've seen photos from Murray Grant, who's another chap I want to speak to, because he, Grant's of Bucky.
That's right. I met Murray Grant at a truck stop in Spain, actually, a couple of years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know he used to pull a bit for Graham. So he would probably know a little bit more. I have to ask him at some point. So as far as I'm aware, Graham now is a director of a tyre company in Peterhead. I've tried contacting them to see if I can speak to him, but not got anywhere as yet. But
don't give up.
I'm not giving up. I'd love to speak to him. I mean, the flipping heck, it was then bought by Chris at Tyre Tracks. He spent a lot of time and whatnot getting it back on the road, which you'll be able to read about. It then went to another chap, Steve Fellows. Then it went, I believe, to Jeff Warren from down my way, who's not far away. I know his boy Dan. Then CDC bought it, the truck accessory company. And then I think they then sold it. And I think from my timeline, I think Anthony Binns bought it from CDC, I believe. And then Anthony sold it on to another chap whose name escapes me at the moment, who's currently got it and it's being restored. So it's had quite a life.
I didn't realize it's had so many owners after tire tracks.
Yeah.
At Ecclesall. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't realize either. So I didn't really realize who owned it between Graham and CDC. I knew that CDC had it because they're Bury St Edmunds or were. Which is close to me, and it would appear at the local shows around here and put in their show trailer and whatnot. So, and then I knew Anthony Binns had it, but that was kind of it.
So is that Paul Binns, is it?
It's Paul Binns' son.
Paul Binns' son. And where are they based? Are they...
Frapston Way, somewhere.
Okay. Because his name, that's a name I would have seen around, but as regards show trucks, there was a couple of green 143 top lines. I'm not sure if they were 470s or
identical
not.
Identical ones. And somebody's told me that he's still got one, which...
Oh, okay, right. Yeah, which they had that kind of a Stuart Myhill looking sort of customization.
They did,
of them.
Yeah, they did. and he had a Transcon and a DAFS. Was it 28 or 3300 space cab?
It was a space cab.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that he, it was part of some, they do some run, that run that went down to Milan. Old timers went there a few years ago. Was that on that run?
I think it was, yeah. So I'm guessing he's probably still got that. So,
he's had some nice trucks over the years.
Yeah, definitely. So he's another one I need to try and chat to at some point. So, because he I think he still does a bit in the music world, subcontracting. I know he used to sub for Redburns when Redburn Transfer existed, because I met several of his drivers sort of over the years pulling for them, and I think he did a bit for Flybenite as well.
When did Redburn Transfer cease trading? Because there was a guy up in County Donegal had an ex-Redburn Transfer F12 Globetrotter.
Yeah.
And there was a kind of I remember looking in the magazines years ago, and Redburn Transfer have bought however many of these trucks, and they looked really striking in that livery with the white stripe and the red black their black lettering. On it.
I don't know, to be honest. It might even be getting close towards 10 years now. I think it's been a few. A few years, yeah. Because a few of their drivers ended up at Trans Am, and a few went. They all sort of drifted into a lot of the other companies. And my good mate Richard Warren went on to a tour recently for McGuinness, and there's a chat. He said that, because I was just out talking, and he said the lead driver was Mark Phillips, and Mark used to work for Redburns, and I think he's worked for Atkins and Sanders, who was another old company that the owner died many years ago, and I think Redburn they closed, and Redburns kind of picked up all the slack from Atkins and Sanders, I believe. So, there's an awful lot of people who were there that have been in the music industry for an awful long time. So, but I think quite a few of them are still knocking about, sort of doing a bit, just for different companies now.
You're listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, brought to you by TomTom. The TomTom Go navigation offers a specific set of truck features. You can set your cargo and truck dimensions for specific routes, so you can drive confidently on suitable roads, making every journey efficient and reliable. Truck yeah.
It would be nice to see, Cardner's 143 restored or repainted in the original colours, like he had done, in the way that Phillips Royal Centurion has been restored, and Streeter's 88, return them to their former glory.
Yes, yeah, it would. I mean, whether that would happen or not, I've no idea, because I don't know what sort of condition the the painters in, because Matt the airbrusher actually painted or airbrushed the leading lady, as it was then called, and the reason behind the gold paint. Do you remember Rob Brown from Avonmouth? Do you ever see his trucks about?
The Midas Touch.
Yeah,
he had probably one. Was it? I'm not sure if it was the first, but he had a 144/460 top line in 1996. He was pulling for TNT.
Yeah. Well, if that
that's what I remember.
That might have been the one that was because it was painted. It's a shade. It's not the same as the Master Centurion.
But it was like a pearlescent kind of a
goldy sort of colour. Well, there was paint left over from that. And that's where the leading lady got her paint from. And then Matt airbrushed it. So I don't know whether the cab needs a lot of repairs or not, as to whether that's sort of salvageable or not. But I suppose if, like you say, it would be great if it was put back to how it was when it was new. It looked pretty cool. But it's down to the individual, I guess, isn't it? So,
Of course, yeah. But, you know, there are guys from, you know, of our vintage, which... You know, it's I'd say like Michael Taylor, that's who bought who put the Royal Centurion back to the way it was. And there are guys, you know, of our vintage who remember those trucks.
Yeah.
And they've got the determination, the facilities and the money or whatever to put them back like that. So who knows?
You never know.
But I do remember, I think we spoke about this the last day on that Outlaws. That documentary, and he went to Carnforth Truck Stop, and he had pulled a curtain cider with Carnforth Truck Stop.
That's right,
on the side of it.
Yeah,
which seemed to be a kind of a pretty popular place back in the day.
Yeah, I think it still is. I mean, it's been quite a while since I've been up that way, but it was still operating as a privately owned truck stop, as far as I'm aware. Oh, the hustle was in there. The food was all right, and the showers were, and whatnot. So, hopefully that's still going strong. I presume it is.
Mm, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is nice. So, but there's been there's been some cracking fleets over the years. Not just like the individual sort of own. It was kind of more owner drivers, really, wasn't it before? But with the customization. But even fleets got involved, didn't they?
They did. Well, we spoke about, I suppose, when you talk about fleets, you know, we spoke about, you know, Stuart Yates is way up there, but the other one you have to give him in. To is Maguire's of Cheltenham.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, just they were something else, weren't they? And
they really were.
I did see an article popped up recently. Someone had photographed or scanned and put on Facebook, and I saved it to read through again. And I'm sure Bob Beach had said that he wrote it many years ago, and that was in the DAF. It must have been a 3600 space cab. It was like a 4 o'clock start. And the driver, from what I can't remember the guy's name, I think he's died now. He'd got up at like 1:30 or 2 o'clock to wash the truck before they went out at like 4 a.m, just thinking, I mean, that's real dedication, isn't it? That's hardcore.
Yeah, that is. I think in that article, there might have been a picture of their mum as well. She was in the article. She was kind of the overseer in charge of finances and that. And like a 3600 space cab it might as well have been a spaceship.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, with alloy wheels and stacks and that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just sort of went from there to, you know, they, as we went into the 90s, they obviously had the iconic F-16. I'm sure that was a 4x2, wasn't it?
That was, yeah.
Ambassador or was that?
No, that was an ambassador. That was one of two ambassadors, F500 SDG.
Yeah,
and that was when Truck and Driver did a special of three magazines. You know, Philip Centurion was on one cover, and Maguire's F16 was on the other. And I had the poster on my wall. I'd say that was probably the most stare at poster I had of all the posters. And that was really top class, because it came. Naturally, it came in black.
Yes,
as an ambassador, they had it in the black color for a while. They must have taken off the two American rims pretty soon in its life and put on Alcoas.
Yeah,
and then I think they might have even changed those Alcoas, because in that picture it had, you know, the Alcoas. It's only 4 or 5 holes.
Yeah.
In them, but it had the ambassador, had the big chrome bumper.
Yeah.
Truck's off road bar, CB Oscar spotlights. He had all the, you know, the American style bullet marker lights. That's on the roof, right. But nothing. Yeah. nothing tacky. Yeah, it had the stacks from the Ambassador and the tipping trailer and whoever did the photography for the you know the article. Like it was just it looked absolutely
phenomenal, didn't it?
It looks amazing. Yeah. And the top of the roof was green, isn't that right?
I'm sure it was. Yeah.
And the other kind of a standard, he had really good with Mark McGuire. I think he had really, really good taste because what he did as well was he took off the small little Volvo badge off the front of the grill and put the big Volvo letters a la what you would have had, you know, in the you know the flat top or the early generation F10s and F12s.
Mark 1 and 2s, yeah.
Mark 1 and 2s, Matt, yeah, and had those on it as well. Then he had the stripes on the roof, you know, done in kind of, I think, like, green and cream, but it was absolutely amazing. And actually that truck ended up in that's in the north of Ireland.
Is it? It's still about.
From what I hear, it's still about, yeah. And was it a crowd from Scotland and had it next to LL and MN Finney, and then I think it seems to have been painted black. The last pictures I saw, but it was painted black and the windows are gone over and maybe looking a bit sorry for itself.
Yeah.
But they had you mentioned DAFs, of course they had Scanias. I think they actually had a six-cylinder T-cab as well, didn't they? Like a T, was it a 124?
Yeah, they did, yeah. And not forgetting the said Atkinson Stratos as well.
Oh, the Stratos, they were flat, were they flat cabs? They didn't, had they got it? Oh, maybe they had a Strata Cruiser, had they?
Oh, poor. I got a feeling they were Strata Cruisers, I think.
Yeah, you could be right, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a couple of Mercs there, wasn't there?
I'm sure there was, yeah. Yeah. Because I did speak to Jack McGuire last year, I think it was, and he's got loads of information. So he's another chap I need to speak to. And again, it's just getting the time and whatnot.
He's into the models, isn't he? WSI models.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, he's really busy.
I don't know him, but yeah, I've seen the name.
He's a great guy, Jack. He's really good. So, I mean, that would be a lovely livery to see on something restored, wouldn't it? That would be great.
It would have. It was really, yeah. And they had DAF, they had 95s XFs, yeah, hadn't they, as well, I think?
Yeah, I think they did. Because it was, I know he'd said his dad sadly died, I mean, that was well over a decade ago, I think, and that's sort of, I think that's sort of when it all kind of came to an end, I think.
Which that was Steve McGuire, was it?
I honestly can't remember without speaking to Jack.
Yeah.
But it always amazes me as well, like that F-16 and some of the others, when they're doing bulk haulage, to keep them that clean on bulk is, in my eyes, even more challenging than when you're doing like curtain sides and stuff like that, just because of the nature of the work. Yeah. And so to keep on top of it like that is just... Incredible.
It shows real dedication, and like that F-16 had a tipping trailer with alloys on it, which I don't think I'd ever seen. Didn't see that in Ireland back in that era. But sure, look, it just goes to show you the dedication they had when that guy was getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to clean the truck.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
But McGuire is definitely, you know, they'll go down in history as having. Having one of those kind of fleets.
Oh, without a doubt. There's another one as well that seems to get forgotten about. Was Anderson's bulk haulage, which was Barry Anderson.
That's right. Yes.
Remember
blue and white.
White and blue Volvos, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Now,
big truck show attendees as well,
they were. And that's another one I'd love to look into.
Don't remember per se any like reading art, but I would have seen pictures of them and been kind of blown away. You know, they had round and square headlight F10s
right.
and 12s, chrome corner reflectors, you know, chrome headlight surrounds, and just a little bit of scroll work and painted rims. And were they over east somewhere?
I did read recently where they were from, but I can't remember. I can't blim and remember. It's in my head. It's either Essex,
there'll be someone
or Stoke
listening to the podcast now. Okay.
I hope so, yeah, because I'd love to know if they're still about. Well, I mean, Anderson's bulk haulage, as far as I'm aware, aren't. They're long, long gone. But I'm sure I was told it was Barry Anderson. So whether he's about or family, because they were like Yates's. They weren't full of bling, that word that I don't really like. They weren't, you know, they were just very well presented, weren't they? Just like say, proper artwork,
right.
And just a few bits and pieces, nothing over the top. They were
right.
lovely.
No, but But, you know, just a little attention to detail here and there. And that was the kind of thing, you know, in a way, I suppose I kind of, you know, I kind of admire that more than just, you know, nowadays where it's just like, it could be like a blank check.
Yeah.
You know, how can we, you know, spend as much money as possible on this truck, and does it really look much better at the end of it? You know, sometimes it's kind of questionable. But I do remember actually seeing a picture of a flat cab version 1 Volvo in Anderson's colours. So they must have been around into the mid-90s as well.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, there's got to be someone listening to this that knows more that can hopefully help. And if you can email Truck and Driver or get in contact with them over the socials somehow, get in contact with me. I'd love to hear and be able to do a bit more on them. Because, then, you know, researching into, like, the old Truck Fest winners, their name was always coming up. And Sweetings as well from down the southwest. That's another name that's just come to me.
Yeah.
God, I can't...
Were they Red and...
Were they Red and Blue? Yeah, they had a style, didn't they, at one point?
That's exactly what I was going to say, actually. They had a style. And it actually looked quite... They're a bit of a divisive truck, those tires. You know, people say, oh, they looked ugly. But, you know, they had a pretty short-lived...
They're very unsuccessful. Because I've got a weird... It's not an obsession, but I really like... I'd love to have a Steyr. If I could get a Steyr for the show scene, I'd probably get one just because I'm that kind of person. And
just something different. Well, I wonder what engine they... Did they have their own engine, or what would they would probably use an engine from? I won't even say I'm guessing, like Man or something like that, was it?
I think it might have been, because MAN ended up buying them out.
That's right,
it was only... They'd got a dealer network and whatnot in the UK, and they'd only been in the UK about 9 months or 12 months or so, not long, and then MAN bought them out, and I think sort of pulled the plug on it, unfortunately.
Yes. But I don't think there was any, you know, doubt about their build quality, like, you know, being Austrian.
Yeah.
I think they would have been fairly rock solid.
Yeah.
Not sure after that, but you're, so you have a bit of a fetish for...
I do like a weird,
I'll raise you with one, a Pegaso Troner TX. That's what I'd love.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, yeah, that would be great. I mean, they are essentially a DAF 95, aren't they, with a different grill, but.
the Inessa cab.
Yeah.
Which was also said in Atkinson. Well, actually, I saw something up on the internet the other day, and so there was someone that, you know, posted a picture of the three cabs, and I was looking at the comments, and one of the comments was the Troner was the better looking of the three, and I thought, I definitely agree with that. It was just something they had. They're advertising. They had the Pegaso, horse's head in 3D on the side of the cab. They had these weird kind of wheel trims on them.
They do need binning, them wheel trims. They do look awful.
they're probably but a cool kind of a colour, demo colour, that silver, and they look like this. They sort of look very, very futuristic. There was a couple of companies in the UK had them.
Yeah.
One was Evans from Bideford and Devon.
I didn't know they had any.
No, I'm fairly sure. Unless someone wants to contradict me, but
one of the best known ones would have been GBE Express.
They probably had a few.
The white ones, they had quite a few.
Yeah,
and there's a lovely photo appeared fairly recently. That was a Scottish owner driver, I think it was, just in like the factory silver, the factory stripes, and all that. And he had a Continental Freeze fridge trailer on, and. The photo was taken in Dover, like on the roundabout, and it just looks great. It really, really does.
There was a company in the north of Ireland had two of them.
Oh, really?
And again, there'll be someone screaming the name into their radio, and it'll come to me after we hang up. But I actually had a look up. I looked them up lately, and it's like the two of them were for sale, but had been parked outside, and they just seemed to be gone too far to really bother with. Yeah, but like just an obscure choice of truck.
Yeah.
But like you, I think there's just having something different.
Definitely. I mean, there's, I saw some pictures recently as well of a Magirus Deutz that's at Rush Green Motors, and it's complete, but it is pretty hanging, as most of them are. And I just looked at it and thought, Wouldn't that be lovely for somebody to do that in Trans UK colours? Because that's way above my skill and wallet size to do anything
of course,
like that.
Yeah.
It's going to need an awful lot.
Speaking of restored trucks, I saw lately that the McGovern collection
was or is
coming up for sale. I don't know if that's. I don't think that has passed us yet, has it?
No, I think that goes in September for auction, I believe, because they had them 143 day cabs, and I remember them with their big old ejector trailers running around East London. And I always, and there's certainly at least one or two still in them colours. And I just think, I hope that they stay as they are, because that's to me, it's just right. Same as Trevor Street is 88. You know, you can't change that livery, but again, it's down to the individual, isn't it? And if somebody buys it and wants to put their own name on it, then.
Quite a sizable collection, and you know, I met him at the retro show in Gaydon a few years ago. Real gentleman.
Yeah.
And Danny Lynch was his kind of right hand man when it came to the classic trucks as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting auction, and I suppose those with the interest and the wallets will be snapping up some. He's quite a nice. I mean, you know, he restored a lovely. Bonneted Magra Estates as well.
That's right, yeah. And hadn't he just done a 2800 DAF as well, I think?
The 2800 DAF, that actually came from the north of Ireland. It was O'Kane. Remember, it was white and green.
O'Kane, yeah.
That's the one. So, yeah, a bit of everything. Then there was those Fodens there as well, wasn't there?
Yeah. I think there's was it AECs or Leylands, some 8-wheelers? I can't remember.
Yeah, MANs.
Yeah, early MANs, were they column change ones?
Perhaps. That would have been, before my era, yeah.
Yeah, but before my time as well. That'd be another good one. The Savium, with the MAN cab Savium, that's another slightly obscure one, isn't it?
That's right.
It's not really,
that's right.
I don't really
I looked
see.
At something about Savium lately, and it was, I won't even attempt to, like, but it was an acronym, it was like, Society, automobile, vehicle, whatever the rest of it was, But and then absorbed into the Renault group, wasn't it?
I can't remember if I mentioned it or not, but when we did our Greek run at the start of last month now, heading down from Italy, I actually overtook a Fiat 130 that was still working, rigid.
Wow.
I was stunned at, and this time, actually, going through Italy, saw more older trucks there than actually in Greece, which I was shocked at, because two, possibly three turbo stars still working, three or four,
brilliant.
Two or three series Scanias, that Fiat 130, that's the one that I'm gutted I couldn't get a photo of. Yeah, compared with Greece.
I'm sure you tried.
Oh, yeah, well, because we were in a van, we were doing sort of, more than 50, that was what he was doing. I just see it coming up, and it looked originally like a Merc cab. And I was like, what is it? And because I was driving, I couldn't take a picture. And as I went past, looked in the mirror, it's like, oh my God, that's a Fiat. And I was on a corner as well. And it's just like, that, the one that got away, you know.
There'll always be one of those. But I think they've changed. From what I gathered, they've changed something in Greece in recent times, that guys are kind of selling off some of the older gear and they have to get into newer stuff. I just recall hearing something about that, but I wouldn't mind another trip down there for to see. But I know what you mean about older gear. There's definitely some stuff in Italy there.
Yeah.
And it's just getting so rare now, with all of these kind of environmental kind of regulations in Europe. So it's great. It's seen a Fiat 130, that'll be class.
Yeah, it was, I was just, made up and blown away. Because again, there's not really many on the show scene, is there? Or the 619s or the bigger ones. I know Stuart Johnson had bought one a few years back, which I don't think is done yet. Somebody in France has done one in Trans UK colours, but with their own name on it, which is, I'd love to get over here to have a look at it, but I think that's a eunuch with the Fiat cab rather than the Fiat itself.
Yes. Eunuch is right. Yeah. Connor Jennings has, be sure he is, that's a 130 he has recently as well.
Yeah. Is he the chap who's got Italian turbo that's got, is it the cowboy edition one? That just looked
unreal. With the white and white and green stripes, yeah, he's got basically anything he can have as regards Iveco or, you know, Fiat.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm glad it's not just me that likes these weird and wonderful things.
Yeah, well, like, just going back to what we said in the start of the podcast, they were just, trucks were so unique back then. They had these, you know, really kind of individual grills and cab shapes that you just don't really seem to get. Like, the bigger cabs have gone, they're all sort of, look to me, fairly, very similar, you know?
Yes, definitely.
And it's all, of course, aerodynamics as well, you know, it's taken away the kind of the character of them.
Definitely, yeah. And it's, yeah, with the cost of fuel and running a truck and this and that, you can see why. And especially you start bolting stuff onto something that's been designed for God knows how many hours in a wind tunnel for optimum, airflow.
Well, you know, it makes me laugh when I see, you can buy the Volvo Aeros now. I was talking to an operator lately in Ireland, and he said it's $3,000 more. I think he said $3,000 more for an Aero, you know, and I'm looking at guys, you know, pictures of Aeros coming out, and first thing is like a light bar on the roof with a load of spotlights, or they were saying like a headboard or something. You're like, this, you know, to spend all this money to tell you that, you know, you can save 5% in fuel by having this bit of a chin jutting out the front of it, and, you know, ditch your mirrors and ditch your visor and all that. What do you do then? Like, you put a Celta light bar with all the stuff hanging off it, and it's like, it doesn't really what do you think of the Aeros, actually, just before we sign off?
I've seen them very briefly on the road, not had a good look around them, although Bartram's just down the road from me, they've got some, so I need to go. And I think if they're painted right, I think they look pretty good, personally. I know the usual thing, like when they come out, everyone's like, oh, that looks horrible, blah blah blah, but I think they look pretty good.
Yeah, when the next gen Scanias came out, you know, everyone thought they looked, well, not everyone.
Yeah.
You're always going to get people that'll die by the code. But, they weren't particularly pretty. And then after a while, they get painted. And, you know, I wasn't a big fan of the Aeros. But I saw a couple of pictures lately of, you know, this company, Kempen in Holland, white and blue.
Yes.
And they did look quite sharp. And I've seen ones in Greece as well. But, of course, the Greeks will always make stuff look cool, no matter what it is.
Definitely.
And, look, I think I'd still prefer to have a standard one. But, you know, if they're painted right and they've got the lower spoiler and you know, forget about these mirror cams, just have your regular mirrors and put a visor on it. Yeah. Not too bad, really.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. So what have you got coming up the sort of next few weeks of work? Is it sort of much the same, do you think? Or
So tomorrow, I'll head off tomorrow evening back out to that station for two of us to go back out there for another full day of paddock karting. Then we'll head over to another station and load for Halls Creek, I think, and then back down to the Fitzroy area. So, it'll be nothing overly kind of, you know, far in terms of, well, as things go here for distance, you know, it could be like 600-700 km maybe, or maybe 800 km from base. But as, you know, in a sort of a one trip direction, nothing overly far, and maybe load a couple of boats here. And we started early April, so, you know, April, May, June, July, into August now, and it's still, there's no sign of it letting up. So it's quite good, Matt. Yeah. You know, I'll keep going for, you know, up until October, November, whatever, December. It could die off or it could rain, but it's the kind of thing where you go hard while it's on, and then
make hay while the sun shines and all that.
Yeah, make hay while the sun shines and have a couple of months off. What about yourself?
So I'm just going to be ticking along doing the usual sort of local stuff. I've got a trip to Munich just after the bank holiday. I've got the children's convoy that I do every year on the August bank holiday Sunday, and then that'll be off to Munich in the pet van to collect the dogs that take to Greece. Other than that, just the local work, and hoping just I've got a few book projects on the go, and hopefully really get stuck into this vintage vault thing with a bit of research on the old show trucks. And one we never got to cover and talk about, we'll have to maybe do that another day, was the Yeoman Volvo Southern Comfort. So people know more about that one, I'd love to hear. Anderson's, and if other people have got any suggestions of ones we haven't talked about yet that they'd like to see or me to try and find out. I'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, like, you know, just, you know, our knowledge of them is, you know, pretty limited to what we remember. There's probably people out there that'll have more knowledge. So if they're in the humour of, you know, contributing, by all means. And we'll pick up on it next time.
Without a doubt, mate, yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Paul.
Yeah, well, pleasure as always, yeah.
Yeah, most enjoyable. And truck on safe, and we'll speak to you soon.
You do, Matt.
Thank you for tuning in to the Truck and Driver podcast, proudly sponsored by TomTom. As a special thanks to our listeners for trucking through the holiday season, we're giving away 1 month free of TomTom Go Navigation Truck. Simply download the Go Navigation app and use the code TRUCKYEAH. That's TRUCKYEAH when subscribing. Safe travels, folks.